Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 334 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
Hey, now! I'm not going to yell and blow everyone's eardrums out.
That's what you do, though. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But, long weekend for me. I was recording my comics and stashed my comics, so I have that going for me.
I'm so far behind on that. About a month or two ago, I was able to organize everything into boxes again,
mm-hmm.
instead of just having giant piles here in my office. And Todd, do you know if you buy comics on a weekly basis, that pile never goes away?
Oh, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. I'll tell you, I'm starting to fill up short boxes much faster than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to cut down on my comics. I'm getting overwhelmed.
Yeah, I definitely need another cull.
Oh, maybe we could do a con together sometime. I hear there's one in the Meadowlands in April.
Oh, boy. Because I do want to be witness to a murder and or a jailing.
Oh, who doesn't? Who doesn't?
So, Todd, what do we have on the show this week?
Tons of news out of Comics Pros. Another comic book character gets a day. I think we should all get a day. Me get a day, you get a day, everybody gets a day. And also, a tasty comic gets an award nomination. And friend of the show, by the way. Also, we have freebies and digital sales. Con news, what we read last week, which was Super Sons number one and Batwoman Rebirth number one. So two brand new number ones. Also, what we're looking forward to next week. Todd and Leonard have issues. This week's issue is Amazing Spider-Man 267. And at the end, we're going to have spoiler talk of The Walking Dead episode. There was no Flash or Legends this week because of Valentine's Day. There was no romantic Flash Legends episodes.
So strange.
I don't know. I think Flash would bring lovers together fast.
I agree. And I don't know. They could have... They did just air the Christmas episode of Legend of Tomorrow, so let's get further behind.
But that is a time travel show, so it works at any time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Maybe they just didn't want to lose those ratings to the kids who are off having their romantic dinners.
We shall see.
Yes.
And then we have stuff to discuss for what we'll be discussing in a couple weeks, maybe.
Okay.
Well. But we'll get to that before we get into Walking Dead.
Right.
So, as Todd mentioned there, we did have some news, but before we get into the glut of news that was Comics Pros, and this is how I know we're not in the business, as they call it, that we were not invited to, and I only knew about Comics Pros as it was happening.
Right. I think we'll probably get an invite next year.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But before we get into all of that, as Todd mentioned, there is yet another day coming up. You know, we have Free Comic Book Day. We have Halloween Comic Fest. Isn't there a Doctor Who Day as well?
There is a real bona fide Doctor Who Day.
Right. There's a Batman Day. And now in June, there's going to be a Wonder Woman Day.
I wonder if that's going to tie in with anything.
Right. I'm sure. And again, listen, anything to get awareness up about the movie. For some reason, I was under the impression it was coming out next month, but apparently it's not coming out until the summer. So this day was tailor-made for someone like me who has no idea when things are happening.
Next month is Logan.
Right. And that's what, yeah. Well, you know what? You're talking about it here. I am going to do my darndest to see Logan opening weekend so we can discuss it here on the show.
I'm probably going that Thursday, definitely.
Okay.
So I know we're already, a couple of us are already making plans, so.
Okay. We got a lot going on this weekend. So got to get through this weekend first before we start making plans for following weekends.
Yes, you are a man who has much going on, where I'm like, oh, I'm going to get off the couch and go see Logan.
Right. So it's going to be a busy summer, officially starting, you know, I guess it officially started last week with the Batman Lego movie. We got Logan, we got Wonder Woman, Guardians of the Galaxy, the new Spider-Man movie. Are there any other ones that I'm forgetting for this summer, comic book-wise?
Is there just, not summer, but at the end, I think November is Thor.
Right, that I knew, yes.
Okay, well, summer, I don't know. I don't know what falls in the summer blockbuster category.
I'm going to look. This is going to be part of the show.
I know Star Wars is at the end of the year, right?
Right.
And that's a comic now, so it counts.
We got such a good discussion about last week's giant episode
that we should probably stretch this one out. I'll watch the clock. Don't worry.
If we could do a 20 hour episode.
Oh my God. That's we should go for the world's record of longest podcast.
No,
we could get some powder to help us. Like,
oh, that's right.
Talcum.
We can repurpose it to podcast powder.
That's right. Talcum. So we don't chafe while we're doing the podcast.
I'm guessing that the new Mummy film does not count.
As a comic book movie, no, but a summer blockbuster. And that looks terrible, by the way.
I don't know. The Transformers movie definitely doesn't count.
Right, no.
Kingsman? Terrible. Does Kingsman 2 count?
That is a comic book movie, technically.
Now, I never saw the first one. Have you?
No, I didn't. But and this one is probably like new material because I don't think it's based on any, like there was no Kingsman sequel, you know what I mean? And it's not, the comic wasn't even, I don't know what it was called, but it wasn't the Kingsman.
Right, I think the comic was called Secret Service.
I think it was, yes.
Right, so that's actually it for the summer for comic book movies. Spider-Man is in July, Wonder Woman is in June, Guardians of the Galaxy is in May, Logan is in 2 weeks. And then I don't think there's anything in April.
Not that I can think of.
Yeah, late in March is Power Rangers. Again, that doesn't count.
It has a comic book. I know. And they're fighting the Justice League in the comic book, aren't they? It's Justice League versus Power Rangers, right?
No.
No, who's the Power Ranger comic?
There is a Justice League Power Rangers comic book, but there's like also like two ongoing Power Rangers comics proper.
Right, that's what I said, but I meant I think that was part of the thing when the movie kicked off, there was going to be a Justice League Power Ranger comic coming out.
April looks like a good dumping ground for nothing.
Ah.
So Wonder Woman comes out in July.
And it's getting its own day. I wonder what they're going to have. I wonder, we should get a Wonder Woman cape for that day.
Right. So the other bit of non-comics pros news would be friend of the show, Tom Durenick, the comic that he did with Tony Bedard that we actually talked about and reviewed on this very show. If I wasn't dealing with other issues, I would have went and looked that up to see what episode it was that we had talked about it. But the KFC Flash comic book that they did as a promotional tie-in for Kentucky Fried Chicken is currently up for an Ad Age Award for Best Content Marketing.
Funny, you'd think it would be the new one, but...
All right.
Of Two Worlds?
Okay. Is it the new one? Yes.
I was going to say, is because that other one is 2 or 3 years old, isn't it?
The Colonel Corps one?
Yeah.
Yes. No, well, it the Colonel Corps one is... It says it's from 2016. No,
right, well, not this
right.
year.
Yeah, the Colonel Corps one is 2015. The Colonel of Two Worlds is 2016. Yeah, it's odd that that's the one that's up.
Right, that shocked me because I thought it was the other. But either way, I hope he wins.
Yes.
So we can get a picture with that award. That'll be fantastic.
Oh, boy. I hope they give him an actual award.
They'll probably print him out something, but I would like to see him get an actual award.
As is my understanding, if you are directly involved with a project, and this holds true for most awards, if you are directly involved with the project, like pen to paper, or you acted in it, or you wrote it, or you directed it, you get the award. If you were a producer or some sort of other level of whatever that award entails,
mm-hmm.
you can also have one as well, but you have to pay for it out of your own pocket.
I would pay for any award I won. That's so I would be easily scammed.
Right.
We're going to win a lot of podcast awards now. Be like, hey, you want that award? $100. And here's like 2 2-by-4s nailed together with my name and Sharpie on it.
So let's get into comics pros. We had news from Marvel. We had news from DC. We had news from Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
So the Dark Horse stuff that they had was that they announced that Karen Berger, who was an editor over at DC, she was essential in keeping a lot of folks around during the Vertigo days. If not kind of turning Vertigo into what everyone thinks Vertigo is.
I agree. I think the best way to describe her is she's the woman who got, you know, basically three of the biggest comic creators now in history published early on in their career. Neil Gaiman, Garth Ennis, and Brian K. Vaughan.
Right. So she is very good at cultivating new talent.
Mm-hmm.
And she is going to be doing her own line of books called Berger Books at Dark Horse. No official start date on when that is going to start rolling out has been announced, but just the announcement that she is working with Dark Horse to hopefully rework that magic that she did at DC all those years ago.
I'm hoping, because this actually has me excited, because I miss Vertigo. And I could see some great things coming out of here. And I wouldn't be surprised if her old friend Neil came back to do a mini series or something. If it's something like that. Or at least adapt something he did to give it a little bump.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Currently, his American Gods is being adapted as a comic book. Dark Horse.
Ah. I wouldn't be surprised if they went maybe with something new. You know what I mean? I don't.
Right.
But I could see him giving her all the help, you know, because he got her, you know, she got him started, you know what I mean? And who knows who she can find, new talent, old talent. I'm really looking forward to this because, like I said, she knows her job inside and out.
Right, so the other Dark Horse announcement that they had was that they've also signed a partnership to produce a comic series and line of products for Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Mm-hmm.
Mystery Science Theater is going to be having a new run starting up here soon. I don't know when the new MST3K stuff starts on Netflix.
I don't know either.
I think it's soon, but I am a big MST3K fan.
I am too, a little less, because I didn't get to. I had the most, you know, terrible luck when it came to that and my cable services.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed, remember how it was moving around for a while?
Well,
it seemed like whenever I'd get a new cable station, it'd be like, oh, Mystery Science Theater's on. And then it would move to a channel I didn't get.
Well, I was aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just through general pop culture. But I never had it on our cable that we had in our area until, I think, like 1994, when they started mm-hmm. doing the Mystery Science Theater Hour, where they would take one of the full episodes and split it up amongst two episodes on syndication. And it would be on after Saturday Night Live.
I vaguely remember that.
Okay, so that was the first time that I really got the chance to watch it. And then when it moved from Comedy Central to Sci-Fi was when we got Sci-Fi on our cable, because that was right around the time that cable opened up
mm-hmm.
in our Piddlin' town. And those sci-fi episodes, I have a very high fondness for, because I would watch them all the time, because sci-fi would play them all the time.
Yes, they then, had a tendency to keep stuff in heavy rotation.
Right, and then also around that same time was when a lot of the episodes started getting released on VHS and DVD. So I start picking up older ones of those from that.
Right.
So, from like, you know, I did get involved in it very late. I know a lot of our listeners are probably shaking their heads of us Johnny-come-latelys when it comes to Mystery Science Theater. But I was getting involved with the new one tentatively. I was definitely going to check it out, and I still can't find where it says the release date anywhere. Even on Netflix itself, it doesn't say when it's starting up. It just says, add to my list, and you'll be notified when the new episodes air.
Right.
But I'll definitely check out to see who is involved and what Dark Horse does with the property.
I'm just curious as to the comic, whether it's going to be a comic about them on the space station. Because what I want to see is them get the rights to classic comics, and then they could draw their heads in panels, and they could critique what's going on. That's the way it should be done. Like old crappy public domain comics.
I think that would work, but mm-hmm. I'm sure there is a bunch of stuff that Dark Horse probably has the rights to.
True.
That they could probably play with as well.
Right. I'm trying to think. Like, I could see them doing Conan stuff.
Yeah.
Other stuff like that. That'd be really cool. I think that's the way to go with it. But if not, you know, I'll give it a try probably when it comes out.
As will I. It's in one of the new columns on the spreadsheet for stuff that's coming that doesn't have a date.
Ah, just like the Netflix show.
Just like the Netflix show. So Marvel had a couple announcements as well. Most notably was a big giant splash page by Alex Ross that says Generations. And it has mm-hmm. all the different versions of all your favorite heroes. Whether it be multiple versions of Phoenix or Wolverine or Thor or Cap, Nova, right on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you like legacy characters? Then we have something for you at Marvel.
Well, this is the first time that Marvel is kind of addressing, because legacy characters was always DC's thing.
Sure. Yep.
Whereas, you know, Marvel more or less didn't do that, or if they did, they didn't acknowledge it in such a way.
That's pretty much because they had the Golden and Silver Age that their characters, like Cap, stayed, you know what I mean? And stayed the Captain America and stuff like that, where it was like, oh, where DC was like, we have Jay Garrick and Alan Scott, and now we have Barry Allen and Hal Jordan. So you had these two generations of characters, where Marvel, like when it started in the 60s, basically with a few characters left over from the Golden Age, it just got stretched out and kept going. So they had a few times that somebody would pick up the mantle, but there was never any really replacements until like later, like more recently.
Right, and this leads into what they may be doing, as we discussed over the last couple of weeks here in the show, where there's a lot of rumors and talks of a lot of these books going back to a basics sort of ideal, kind of boiling the characters back down to essentially attempting to do what DC did with Rebirth with their characters.
Right, trying to catch lightning in a bottle for them.
I know this is... Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, I'm done.
I was going to say, this is something that we have talked about at the comic book shop, not only with our local retailer, but other people there at the shop as well, how there are a lot of people out there, as successful or as, you know, unsuccessful as some of these new characters at Marvel may be, there is a very big segment of the population that, you know, want to read a Steve Rogers Captain America book where he's not a member of Hydra. They want to read a Thor book where it is the Thor that they know growing up. They want to read a Spider-Man book where it's just like the book that they read however many years ago it was.
Which I always said, we talked about this last week on the show, where it's what worked. It's the formula that worked. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and I know experimentation is great. It's fantastic. It's like, well, you know, we get like Hawkeye or somebody try something new with a character that fits and works, and then that becomes part of their history forever. But a lot of times, go back to those things that made these characters popular. It's going to work in any, with very few exceptions, unless like your character is based on dated technology, like Transistor Man or something like that, like AM Radio Guy or something like that. It's you know, that has to be updated. But for the most part, like Spider-Man, he's timeless. He works forever, that formula that, you know, Stan Lee and Ditko came up with.
Right, and, you know, obviously change can be good, but, you know, as our retailer has said to us, when everyone is different and everyone has changed. If you remember the Marvel marketing campaign from 2 or 3 years ago, where it was in Entertainment Weekly and all of their different media arms that they have out there, it's like, here's this different Iron Man who's not Tony Stark. Here's this different Thor who's not, you know, the Thor that's in the movies. And here's this different Captain America who's not the Captain America in the movies. This is who we're putting out front and center of our universe. Mm-hmm. And now it seems as though they're pulling back a little bit on that.
And like I said, they kind of should, because I keep bringing up the point when I talk to people about this. I'm like, of the original Avengers or the early Avengers, none of them are the same character that they were. And that's your big team now because of the movies. So I just find it funny. It's like, oh, we have the Hulk is Amadeus Cho, and Cap is a little different. He came back, but Jane Foster, Thor. It's like none of the originals, no Hank Pym, no. So I'm like, I'm cool with it, but you know, like Dave says, our retailer is like too much, and it affects sales. It really does, and people mention it a lot. So I can't wait for the new back to basics approach.
So, lastly, from Comics Pros, and there was tons and tons of stuff that came out of this, and we're just kind of cherry-picking the stuff that kind of appeals to us, or, at the very least, we think will appeal to our listeners, is DC is announcing yet another, I guess, run of crossovers between the DC Comics characters and the Looney Tunes characters. Kind of like what they did with the Hanna-Barbera stuff.
Right.
I know next month we have a bunch of those annuals, those like mixed up annuals, where they're like, oh, Booster Gold and the Flintstones and the mm-hmm. Banana Splits and Suicide Squad, which we're going to have Craig from Puzzle Warriors 3 on to talk about that when that comes out.
Okay.
Because he's super excited about it. He's enjoying all of those books, specifically the Wacky Racers, the Wacky Raceland book.
Right.
And he was over the moon when the Banana Split Suicide Squad thing came up, so we're going to have him on to talk about that. But the Looney Tunes DC thing is a bunch of crossovers. You've got Lobo with the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. You've got Batman and Elmer Fudd, which is the only one that kind of doesn't work for me.
What? It will work. Don't you worry.
I'm not worried that it won't. It just, right off the bat, doesn't work. Martian Manhunter versus Marvin the Martian, which you would normally think would be the one that works the most, until you get to the one where it's Yosemite Sam and Jonah Hex.
I cannot wait for this crossover.
Now, whether or not it's going to be a one-shot, whether it's going to be whatever it is, but whatever it is going to be, that is a must-buy. And I think... go ahead.
And Jimmy Palmiotti, I hear, is going to be writing it.
Right. So we don't know that, for sure. It's just speculation.
I said it looks point. Like. Looks like. And by that cover that they teased, it looks like my favorite Looney Tune character of all time is in it, too. It looks like Foghorn Leghorn is in it as kind of a Papagayo character who is one of Jonah's enemies who had a parrot. So I'm like, oh, God, just make jerk Foghorn Leghorn in this, too. And I'm sold. I'll take 10, please.
Right, and this was one of those ones where I just saw that, was that Mark Texaria cover?
Yes.
And I saw that cover, and I'm like, I don't need to know much else about this comic to know that I'm buying it. And then with the speculation that Jimmy Palmiotti is going to be involved somehow, I'm all over it.
And I get another issue for the kill count on my old Jonah
there you
Hex
go.
Twitter account. Whether he does, I hope he kills Yosemite Sam. Shoots him right in the face.
I could see it being a misunderstanding at first, and then the two of them kind of working together against some other sort of big bad.
That's right. It's probably I hope Yosemite Sam owns a casino, and Jonah wins all the money, and he's trying to get it back through devious ways, like some of the old Looney Tunes cartoons.
So that's all the stuff that kind of came out of Comics Pros that we wanted to talk about. But there was tons and tons of stuff.
There was.
And I'm sure if you want to know more, you can go find that there. And you could find it more if you go to some conventions this weekend. Hey, hey.
Ho, ho.
Most of them are kind of toward the Midwest. This weekend, there is the Great Lakes Comic Con in Warren, Michigan.
Hmm.
The people that are going to be there, Todd.
Right.
Not a ton of media guests. But on the comic side of thing, you've got Ryan Stegman, who I'm a fan of his run from Superior Spider-Man. You've got, looking over the list, Greg Land, who just did an issue of Monsters Unleashed. Jim Shooter is going to be there. But the two big media guests are Jake the Snake Roberts and Nicholas Hammond.
Oh, who's Nicholas Hammond?
He is Peter Parker from the 70s TV show.
Woo!
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get my Colander Eyes Spider-Man mask signed.
Now, there's another one, the NWI Comic-Con in Shererville, Indiana. I don't know how any of that connects. That's more your comic book one. No media guests, but you've got people like Dave Dorman, Mike Norton, Tim Seeley are going to be there. So that's more your comic book one. Not to say the Great Lakes one isn't, but at least they got a couple media guests there, if that's more your speed.
The other one's going to have Jake the Snake Snake. So he gets money from both cons.
Oh, boy. I don't know if the snake is still around.
I just imagine his snake, like, really sad, like, coughing, just, like, wrapped up, like, with an extra long scarf, just, like, an elderly snake. That's what I picture. No?
Hmm.
Snake not doing well.
Back in the day, Todd.
Yeah?
World Wrestling Entertainment hired someone, because back in the day, a lot of people had animals.
Right.
Jake had a snake. Coco Beware had a bird, Frankie. The British Bulldogs had a bulldog, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
World Wrestling Entertainment hired an animal wrangler who would kind of take care of these animals whenever they would be traveling from town to town. Bird is okay. You know, bird is in whatever it is. Dog is okay. It's in its kennel thing. Not too many people were too keen on messing with the snake, right?
Right.
You gotta think, this is the 80s, it was a different time, getting through airports. Let's just say there might have been more in the bag that had the snake than just the snake.
Uh-huh.
It might have been where they were keeping their podcast powder.
That's right. Oh, boy.
Rails on a podcast, plane. What was that?
Rails on a plane.
Speaking of podcast powder, Todd, there's a plethora of podcasts on the soon-to-be-named network, which we are a part of, and it's a bunch of different podcasts of friends of ours, family members of ours. Pretty much anyone who asks to be part of the network is part of the network. I'm easygoing like that.
That's right. All-inclusive right here.
That's right. And we've got podcasts covering every topic from Star Trek The Next Generation, Marvel Puzzle Quest, the Voltron show that's on Netflix, comic books like this show, politics, religion, what does Fresher in Parlance call their show? They call their show a lifestyle show.
Oh boy.
Oh boy indeed. Talking Gimmicks, which does professional wrestling, and newest edition is the Aim Down Sight podcast, which specifically covers gaming, computer and video of both kinds.
Oh boy, when Red Dead Redemption 2 comes out, I'll be on that one.
Oh well, listen, I'm sure I can pull some strings and get you on there.
Woohoo! That's one of only two games I play religiously: Grand Theft Auto and Red Dead Redemption. So either one of those, and I'm your golden boy right there.
You don't want to do my Qbert podcast that I'm starting up next month.
Oh boy, I got a Dig Dug podcast coming out.
I like old video games because I'm an old man.
Top dog, but go ahead.
Right. So there is a podcast called Retronauts where they talk about old games.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been doing more episodes lately. It's like, oh, it's the 10-year anniversary of the Wii. And I'm like, I don't want to hear about something that's 10 years old. Let's talk about things that are, like, older than that. And I've gone through their entire archives. And you do not know how upset it makes me that they have never done an episode about the entire run of all the Mr. Do and Mr. Do spin-off games.
Mr. Do.
I am a huge Mr. Do fan. Mr. Do is Dig Dug, but good.
Do they have a Tapper episode?
They do have a Tapper episode. I think it falls in to not so much as, like, the banned games, but mm-hmm. games that, like, dealt with drugs and alcohol and sex and stuff like that.
There was none. Never as a video game had any of that stuff.
Well, again, nowadays it's one thing, but back in the day it's another thing, you know? You had to sneak that stuff in there.
In a bag with a snake.
Right. So be sure to check out any of the new shows. Anytime a show comes out, whether you follow the Twitter at STBN Network or go to soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, anytime any of those shows come out, they're going to be up there on the site, and you could be the, like, second or third person to get them. I think if you subscribe to, like, a podcatcher, which is a dead-end street, or the actual RSS feeds themselves, like I do, I grab it off the RSS feed, I throw it up on the Tumblr, and then I send it out.
Is there a pod pitcher?
No, I wish there was, so I could throw these pod catchers in the garbage.
There is, because if you got a pod catcher, you need a pod pitcher.
Not a pod belly itcher?
There you go, now you're getting
it. This is tough, Todd.
Uh-huh.
You make it look easy.
Oh, I do.
Telling horrible, unfunny jokes.
I can tell horrible, unfunny jokes all day.
Right. So let's move on to digital sales and freebies. There's a ton of sales going on currently. The X23 stuff is kind of left over from a week or so ago. Ghost in the Shell, the manga, the entire run of it is on sale for some crazy super low price through Kodansha Comics. Again, not familiar with the comic. I'm not an anime guy myself, so I do apologize if I'm mispronouncing this or not giving them their due respect. So I do apologize there. Dynamite is having a sale on their John Carter Warlord of Mars stuff. Marvel is also having a sale on Jason Aaron Wolverine stuff. Now, it's just the Wolverine solo stuff. It's not the Wolverine and the X-Men stuff, but it's a bunch of the trades of the stuff that he did, and there's a lot of really good, really fun stuff in there. For some reason, you're like, oh, there's no good Wolverine stories. A couple of these are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And DC is having a sale on Batgirl stuff, because apparently it is Batgirl's 50th anniversary. And there is a bunch of stuff in there, whether it be trades, whether it be single issues. And I have to chortle, because they have a bunch of, like, oh, here's a bunch of random one-shotty things, right? Or here's a bunch of, you know, like, just one-off trades, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And here's, like, all the Birds of Prey trades, and here's all of the Cassandra Cain, you know, trades, and here's all the New 52 Batgirl stuff, and here's the kind of hipster Batgirl stuff that followed it, and then they have the Stephanie Brown stuff, but the Stephanie Brown stuff is all in single issue, because
mm-hmm.
that is the oft-forgotten DC run from that era that they just stopped doing the trades of.
Oh.
You know, we always talk about your Rebels and, you know, your other things, but, like, this one always gets overlooked of, like, oh, yeah, they did, like, the first, like, and the trades, like, if you could find the trades of these, they are super expensive, too. Uh-huh. So that's the only one that they don't have any trades for, because they're like, yeah, we're not going to put two trades and then the rest single issues.
So are people sending Dan DiDio waffles because of this?
Oh, Todd, look at you remembering stuff.
Hey, I remember the waffles, because I was like, I bet a lot of good waffles got wasted, because if I was Dan DiDio, I would not eat waffles sent to me by strangers. So they went in the garbage. Perfectly good waffles destroyed.
I hope this will be the last time that I mention it. Mm-hmm. But if I was in some sort of position of power, I would upset the apple cart in such a way that for people to, like, how they sent, what was it, peanuts that they sent for Firefly? Or was it something else?
I think so.
It was Jericho. There was a TV show, Jericho, that they sent.
That, like, was peanuts. The one, yes.
Right. Okay. So if I'm in a position of power, I'm going to do something to upset the populace, uh-huh, so that they send me promo powder.
Oh, boy. In a bag with a snake.
In a bag with a snake.
Anytime you mention that now, that's what's stuck in my head. In a bag with a snake.
The only other thing that I want to mention with the Batgirl sale is the first three issues of Batgirl Rebirth are part of the sale as well, and I only mention it because DC is not doing the regular price drop on the Rebirth stuff, because they're normally, mm-hmm, $2.99, and the digital stuff is going to stay $2.99. Usually in the past, it'd always go down to the $1.99 after 6 months or whatever it was. They're not doing that, so when DC Rebirth stuff shows up on a sale like this, I always like to point it out.
Right.
Get that Rebirth stuff digitally and a little bit cheaper than normal.
And is the digital stuff returnable for retailers?
No, it is not.
Okay.
Now there is, and this is, well, write digital returnability down.
Digital returnability.
Yes. So that covers the digital sales. There's no new freebies. It's the same ones that we mentioned last week, and all of those will be in the show notes, just like everything else that we mentioned, whether it be the conventions, links to the soon-to-be-named network, what have you. Let's get into what we read from this past week, Todd. I've talked for a very long time, so I'll let you kick things off with Super Sans, written by Peter Tomasi with art by Jorge Jimenez.
Jimenez, yes. This is a story told of both Damian Wayne and Jonathan Kent, Superman's son in the new Rebirth universe, and it's some of John's life on the farm and some of Damian's life, you know, in the cave with the family, and how they meet up to go on an adventure because something's going down at LexCorp. And it's interesting to see, because Jonathan Kent is trying to be humble, even though he has the powers and there's bullies in the school, and the odd couple dynamic between him and Damian, who's just a straight forward jerk, is fantastic, because Damian shows up at Jonathan Kent's school just to see how he's progressing, and it's fantastic in the way he does it, because he breaks every single rule, and even John's trying to tell him, he's like, Damian, you did this, he's like, please, I've been doing this since I was 4 years old. It's not a problem. And it's a fun, like, teen book, like a kid book, like with throwback stuff and everything. I just really enjoy their dynamic, and I can't wait to see the adventures they go on, because I think they're going to get caught up with Lex Luthor, and the two kids just, you know, running up against him, I think, is going to be absolutely fantastic. I had a ton of fun reading this book.
I was concerned about how the book was going to be, only because I think Damian doesn't work as well outside of the Bat universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if that makes sense.
I personally think Damian works better outside the Bat universe. He, like, in a group setting, I equate Damian to, and they did this with him in Titans for a while, is he's the Guy Gardner of any group. He's going to show up, he's a jerk, and he's going to be, I'm in charge, and people are going to be like, no. Now, granted, he's more, you know, able than Guy ever was, but you're still like, man, I don't want to have to listen to you. You're a complete, you know, jerkwad. And I'm fascinated by it. And like I said, the two lifestyles just completely clash. But, you know, sometimes friendships are just like that. Two different people who have two different, you know, ways of thinking just get together and they're fine. This book reminds me more of like Peter David's like a Young Justice book than a Teen Titans kind of a, just like that fun kind of adventure book.
Right, and that's definitely what I felt like the art was attempting to remind you of, that Peter David Young Justice run. Now, the question I have is, I know you're not reading a lot of the new Superman stuff.
Right.
I think you're reading Trinity and you're getting a little bit of it from there. Do they do a good job of explaining Jonathan Kent here for the uninitiated?
Not really. That's the one thing
okay.
that I will give them. Like, other than the fact that he's a Superboy, there's not much in the explanation of, like, and I really think that helps instead of hurts, because even in Trinity, they don't touch too much on it. I know mostly about Jonathan Kent because I know people who are reading the Superman books, and they explained to me that, you know, Clark Kent's the John Byrne Superman from before Flashpoint. And I'm like, you know what? The less I need to know, he's somehow Superman's son. I don't even really understand how Damian is Batman's kid. Is he a clone? Is he a quick growth? I don't know. At this point, I'm just accepting whatever they do with these kids.
Fair enough.
Because do you know Damian's origin at all? Or
so there was the Elseworlds book
mm-hmm.
where Batman and Talia had a son.
Right.
And then in the mid-2000s, when Grant Morrison took over the Batman book, he essentially took that Elseworlds story and made it canon. That she had been raising Damian as part of the League of Assassins.
So okay, I guess so. But Damian, wasn't Damian like quick grown at some point or no?
Okay. Toward the end of the Grant Morrison run, through Lazarus Pit technology, and I could, and again, this is something I could be getting wrong. This is something that I haven't read in a little while. Talia had a bunch of clones of Damian.
Okay, that's what I might be thinking.
Right.
Of.
And she kind of, like, had one of the clones, like, mutated or super fast aged him, and then it became, like, a mindless brute that at the end of the Grant Morrison run on Batman and Robin, which was Dick Grayson as Batman, Damian Wayne as Robin, Damian Wayne dies. But okay. Now with Rebirth, or possibly even before Rebirth, he's back, and that part I'm not clear as to why he's back. I just chalk it up to Rebirth.
Somebody punched a wall somewhere.
Right. So, the other book that we've read, did you read Batwoman?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Batwoman Rebirth number one, written by James Tynion, who is currently writing her in Detective Comics, and Marguerite Bennett, who will be writing the Batwoman ongoing with art by Steve Epting. This is, you know, it's been a while since Rebirth happened. It's been about 8 months, and I kind of forgot how a lot of those books were structured, as in reintroducing you to the new way that this character is going to be. Especially since this is a character that has remained relatively unchanged from the New 52 to now, and has been the main character outside of Batman in Detective Comics since Rebirth. However, I feel as though this was a really good story to not only remind you of that stuff, also retell her origin, but also to go all the way back to her beginnings, all the way back to 52.
Mm-hmm.
And the Greg Rucka run in Detective Comics that he had with his character there, playing all of that stuff leading into what has happened as recently as the Monster Men stuff in that Batman crossover that happened back in October.
Right. Plus, it has one of my favorite things that in comics is the last page of several things that are yet to happen.
Yes.
Which is one of my favorite, chalk it up there to the Rip Hunter, time, chalkboard. Just like little tricks like that. It's like, oh, and yet to come. And I'm like, okay, I want to see how we get from this to one of these, you know what I mean? And, I think it's a good issue for telling her origin. I think it's all fleshed out there from her army day, like military days, to her sister, to stuff like that. I'm like, this is the perfect way to introduce this book before we get the Batwoman ongoing.
Right, and Steve Epting's art in this book is beautiful.
It's never not beautiful.
Well, it's a different colorist than who he usually does stuff with, but it's not so different that it's jarring.
Doesn't
any step of the imagination. Like, never did I think, I'm like, oh, this looks bad, or this looks different. Like, it was very obviously Steve Epting's art, but the coloring was just a little different than what I've normally seen of his stuff. Not good, not bad by any stretch. It was just like, I'm like, okay, this is a slight difference in the normal Steve Epting stuff that I've seen.
You know what it is? At times, it's brighter than his usual palette.
His stuff is like a lot of browns, a lot of purples.
Earth tones.
Yes. Whereas this has a lot more reds and a lot more whites to pop things because of Batwoman herself.
Exactly. You can't have that with Batwoman's hair.
Right,
That has to be, fiery red. Fire engine red Batwoman hair.
Yes. So that is going to cover everything that we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week.
Mm-hmm.
If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you get them sent to your home, however it is that you get your books, know what's coming out, be forewarned, be forearmed, do not be surprised, and make your retailer open up an entire bag of backs and bags so you can get one.
Wow, I know somebody who did that.
Speaking from real life experience.
Oh, ripped from the headlines right there.
So two of the things that we're doing with the poll post in 2017 is one is a continuation of what Todd and I have always been doing, which is attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd has a commanding lead over me already, 2 months into the year with 5 correct guesses to my 1. We're also keeping track of how many books we're getting from each publisher as the year is going on. And we have that little running tally underneath the books that we're getting this week as well. Todd gets more books than me. Neener, neener, neener.
I think I always will.
I'm sure there's going to be a week where that's going to either tighten up or I'm just going to overtake you.
You want to bet who has the most books at the end of the year?
No.
That's right, because you lose at bets.
I do lose at bets.
Mm-hmm.
So you started off the show, sir, so you guess.
I get to pick first. I'm looking over your list, and I'm just going to be quick about it. Is it the fix number 8?
It is the fix number 8.
Aha.
And I'm going to guess that's also the same book that you're most looking forward to as well?
Yep.
That's what I figured.
That's right. No movement. It's always the fix. If anything happens to pretzels, we riot. Let's move on.
Oh, boy. If anything happens to pretzels, we riot, huh?
Yep.
Oh, boy. I did not dip my toe into that pool this week, as I could have a little early.
No, I did not either. I'm just saying he's my favorite character.
So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out past episodes of this show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark. Things get a little philosophical on this week's episode. We dig deep on a very serious matter, and it's no laughing matter at that.
Wow.
Right. How do you like that?
I see what you did there, and it'll reading all make sense.
Reading from the script you sent over, Todd. Come on.
That's right. And I am a script reader.
You could also check out past pull posts, past Todd and Joe have issues. Everything is there, all archived, all with a handy-dandy tab for whatever it is that you're looking for right across the top of the page. Underneath the fancy logo, also there is the store where you could purchase shirts or stickers with that same fancy logo emblazoned on them, so you can be the envy of your neighborhood with that soon-to-be AdSense award-winning artist Tom Durenick, who did our fancy logo.
That's right. And if he asked for the award that we gave him, we have to buy it.
No, he has to buy it.
That he has to buy it. That is true.
Right, because didn't he win one of the Pigskin Pick'ems one year? And he's like, where's my trophy? I'm like, oh, somebody local won. You don't get it.
That's right. He had to draw a trophy.
Right. Lastly, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out our Amazon link. St. Patrick's Day is coming up, folks. Stock up now on beads and green dye before it's too late.
Oh, you want to be caught short with not enough green dye.
And whatever it is that they are going to use to remove the green lines from the streets of Scranton.
Uh-oh, Joe has a panic attack.
They haven't painted the lines yet, so I'm still okay.
Don't worry, you'll get a picture on Twitter when I see them.
Just thinking about it makes me shiver.
Oh, you're like, the green lines. There's only one color lines that you need.
We're treading lightly on the explicit tag on this episode.
But we are doing well.
Right, we're walking that fine line, Todd.
We're just staying the right side of that line.
So some of the notable purchases and everything that you purchase through Amazon gives us a couple cents on the back end. They call it an advertising fee. I call it whatever puts money in my PayPal account.
That's right.
Some of the notable things that were purchased were the Beavis and Butthead collection on DVD.
Ooh.
A Samsung Smart Things outlet, which I don't know what that is, because I'm not smart.
That's a smart thing, right, I guess.
Somebody also purchased a Black & Decker blower / vacuum / mulcher.
Okay.
One of those three things don't belong with the other two.
I don't know which one it is, though.
And someone also purchased the last trade paperback of Chew from Image Comics, and they also purchased the Shang-Chi Master of Kung Fu Omnibus. And I have a feeling that those were both purchased by the same person.
Ah, interesting.
A lot of crossover between Chew and 70s Kung Fu books.
I would like to see a mash. Shang-Chu?
Shang-Chu. Pitiful.
What? Fantastic is more like it.
Related but unrelated to those Amazon purchases, be sure to follow us on Twitter. I am at Joe Sposto. Todd is at Roker the Joker. You can follow the show at Longbox Heroes. As mentioned before, the network is STBN Network. And also you can follow Todd's Art Attack. Todd, did we have any new art tweeted to us this week?
Yes, we did. We had a Cerebus / Howard the Duck piece where Cerebus is beating up Howard the Duck, or attacking Howard the Duck. I don't want to say he's beating him up because that would seem rude, but very nice piece. Dave Sim, and as we said on last week's show, surprisingly, we won't be getting any new artwork from him. So hope, you know, it's nice to see old pieces.
Now, I will say that I see that you mentioned that one. But that one is not tweeted out from the Todd's Art Attack Twitter account.
Oh.
What is tweeted out from the Todd's Art Attack Twitter account is friend of the show and host of the Winter Palace podcast, Mark Cole, who has a Grant Morrison-penned Psycho Pirate sketch that he got from him at San Diego Comic-Con in 1996.
Oops, I forgot to retweet something. Let me get right on that.
Oh! Shameful.
But Grant Morrison can draw?
Yes,
he can.
He can
draw better than he can write.
How dare you?
I'm just saying.
So I'm going to keep hitting refresh here until this one that you made up gets tweeted. There you go.
What? It's there.
I'm going to retweet it here myself.
You're a retweeter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Someone's asleep at that Twitter handle.
Oh, well, at least, you know what, we all can't be as efficient as the guy who does the soon-to-be-named network tweets.
I'm doing better until Jared tells me that I missed the show.
Ah, I'm doing better, too, now.
I'm doing much better now.
That's right. I'm John Astin from Night Court, but I'm much better now.
There you go. Hey, he was Harry's dad.
That's right.
So we have, of course, before we get into TV talk, we already addressed what I wanted to talk to you before about Logan. We have Todd and Joe Have Issues. And this was a book that you picked, which was Amazing Spider-Man number 67.
267.
267. My apologies. Written by Peter David. And who is the artist on this as I'm opening it
Bob
up
McLeod.
Here?
Bob McLeod?
No relation to McLeod from the Highlander movies?
Or McLeod from the Mystery Science Theater episodes.
Right.
It's neither man McLeod.
So this is a one-shot entitled When Cometh the Commuter.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Todd, you're the one who picked this. And while I do own this issue, it's in one of those ones where it's like, oh, I got to get them all and I'll read them eventually. And yeah, I did not, I was not familiar with this issue. So you take the lead on this one, sir.
Well, the reason I ended up picking it up was years ago, I'm a big Peter David fan. So when I found out about this issue, I was like, oh, I'll give Peter David a read on anything. So it's basically Spider-Man who's, you know, having a rough go of it from recent adventures, and he's coming down with a cold or something, and he decides to go home to sleep it off after talking with the Human Torch, which, by the way, Human Torch and Peter, just fantastic together. And he's witnessing a crime that's in progress. And it's this, like, nobody burglar guy who's robbing a fashion person from the money out of their safe and proceeds to get the best of them through a series of events, gets on the train and goes out to the suburbs. But Peter manages to tag him with a Spidey tracer. And we get a little bit of how their both lives go, which is absolutely hysterical to me. And then Peter goes out to the suburbs to catch him, where Peter is completely out of his element. This is like a classic fish out of water story. And as we talk about everything that I think Peter Parker should be, Peter David completely, to me, in this one issue, gets the character of Peter Parker slash Spider-Man perfectly. His luck runs so bad in this issue. So bad. It looks beautiful. It's a quick one story, perfect from beginning to end. I absolutely love it. I'm curious to see what you think about it because you've never read it.
I enjoyed it. This is, you know, we talked before about Spider-Man and what it is today versus what most people want it to be. And I think there's a really good iteration, I guess, or representation of what Spider-Man is. The hard luck hero, if you will. Nothing goes his way, no matter what he tries to do, and even just something as simple as stopping a guy robbing a safe out of a clothing store, it's just failure after failure after failure. Then eventually, of course, he gets his stuff together, and he wins it in the end. But there's always, like, one little thing that's kind of hanging over his head, whether it be breaking up with his girlfriend, not being able to make the ends meet in his real life, whatever it is. And the other thing in reading this, I forgot, and I don't want to say how shameless, right? Because I think shameless is a bad word. However, the first couple pages of this, the exposition pages,
mm-hmm.
I guess you would say is where Human Torture essentially shows up for no reason.
He's just flying by. It's New York. Heroes, man.
He's just flying by. So Peter has someone to say all the horrible things that are going on in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, he's in the black costume, and Human Torch could be the one that's like, oh, he's not still wearing that alien costume, is he? So that, just in case, this is your first issue of Spider-Man, he's not in the black costume on the cover, he's in the black costume for a couple issues, but at least they explain why he changes back to his old costume later on.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that was the type of storytelling that they don't do anymore.
Right.
But it was kind of fun in a quaint sort of way, but I really did enjoy this issue quite a bit. In Spider-Man, it's going to be hard-pressed for me not to enjoy a Spider-Man comic book that doesn't have super-fast aging ninja twins.
favorite stories, all of those, anytime they have fast-aging Ninja Twins. But the thing that I like about it is I think even in 1985 or 6 when this issue came out, like, Peter David was ahead of his time writing. Like you said, there is that exposition, but he broke a lot of the rules where Spider-Man, where they explain every little thing that Spider-Man was doing. And this is 1985, and he doesn't do that. I think he's an unsung writer who was really, like, his style holds up because it's today's writing style, but 1985. So I just, anything that he does especially back in the day, I think holds up more than other stuff at the same time.
Now, you have read a lot more recent Peter David stuff than I have.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this kind of fall on the scale of his stuff? Is this better? Is this worse? Is this right in line with what would qualify as his best stuff or his more current stuff, or kind of where does this play in?
I think, okay, current stuff, I'm not a big fan of Peter David's current stuff. He's doing Spider-Man 2099 and I'm reading it and I enjoyed it in the beginning, but he's really one of those that he's rehashing the same story over and over and over in Spider-Man 2099. But where this falls in the grand scheme of, this isn't his best work. His best work to me is still his IDW run of Fallen Angel. But this is close to, like, I think, like, fourth or fifth on my list of Peter David stuff. This is after the Hulk. But this is one of my favorite issues he's ever done. But then again, it's a one-shot Spider-Man. I didn't need anything else, didn't collect a lot. But this is really, like, the tip-top of his stuff other than Fallen Angel.
Now, you said that you're currently reading his 2099.
Right.
2099 is getting replaced by the Scarlet Spider book on the schedule. Are you going to be checking that out because it's Peter David?
Yes, I will check that out because it's Peter David. But it hopefully it won't have any 2099 tie-ins. You know what I mean? I just want something different.
Right. So I will hopefully keep an eye out and remind you when that is coming out so we could. So I want to get your take on it on the show.
Are you going to be getting it?
Probably not.
Okay, just curious, because you're the Spidey guy, and you love the Clone Saga. Clone Saga is the best thing ever. That's my sarcastic voice. Relax.
You are going to be the one that convinces me whether or not I should get it.
Okay, I will.
Because the way that Clone Conspiracy... Now, we do have Clone Conspiracy Omega coming out next week.
Oh, boy, can't wait.
And we have Amazing Spider-Man, I think, 24 coming out this week. Whereas Clone Conspiracy number 5 kind of ends in a very definitive way for the Scarlet Spider.
Ooh, okay.
So, it'll be, you know, but if you read the story, you know if you were a clone, that is not the end. So, I'll be very interested to see what happens in Amazing 24, Clone Conspiracy Omega, to lead us to the Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider book. So there are still two more issues of the Clone Conspiracy stuff to come out that couldn't convince me to pick that up before you have the weight of that on your shoulders.
Right. And the other thing is maybe I'll have you, I mean, off air, just chat me up when it's all over just to get me, like, be like, just give me the cliff notes of what happened. And you know what I mean?
Right. So that is this week's Todd and Joe Have Issues. Next week's Todd and Joe Has Issues is going to be another listener request, and I think this might be one that was sent to us publicly, and it was also sent privately to us, and we're talking a lot about our friend Mark Cole on this one, and I'll be remiss to mention him again. He had suggested one of the books that is on the list, and that is Starman number 19.
Starman number 19.
This is the pirate issue.
Okay.
Okay. So, it is, you know, we'll end up talking a little bit about Starman next week when we talk about this, And yeah, it's a kind of a one shot. They would always do these sort of one shots in between story arcs,
mm-hmm.
where the current Starman was visited by his brother, who was the one who actually wanted to take on the mantle of Starman, not his brother who wanted to own his hipster junk shop before doing that sort of thing was cool. So he was a hipster mm-hmm. before a hipster was a hipster.
Wow. You blew my mind there.
Right. So in between each of the story arcs, he would be revisited by his brother.
The talking with David issues.
Yes. And that's what this pirate issue is. It's one of those.
Mm. I was curious of what, because my mind couldn't just go to what one.
Right.
I thought maybe it was the Ragdoll, Jay Garrick, Alan Scott, Starman Golden Age story. That's the one that immediately jumped to my mind.
That is also on the list.
Spoiler alert.
That one will come up at some time, but not right now.
Wow.
So is there anything else that we need to discuss before we get into Walking Dead?
No.
All right. So for those of you who did not watch Walking Dead, don't care about Walking Dead, don't want to hear about Walking Dead, whatever your problem is, man,
mm-hmm.
we'll catch you next time. And we'll give you a couple seconds to skedaddle while we talk about new best friends on the most recent episode of The Walking Dead. All right. So, let's start off by saying, still no Negan in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Rick and everyone has gone out to find Gabriel. And they come upon the Jadis.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not directly from the comic book. But there's a lot of people who are speculating that they are someone or something from the comic book. But they are not outright. And they're one of the groups that Rick wants to kind of bring into the fold, that if he could get all of these different groups that are all working, not for the Saviors, but kind of under their thumb,
mm-hmm.
if he can get them all together, then as a united front, he could bring them down. Of course, the more the better. And they make him go through some stuff to prove his worth.
Right.
All right. So that's the main plot of this.
Right. I just want to say, me, Todd, glad Joe get to do review of Walking Dead.
Right.
The way people talked in this episode, I just wanted to put my foot through the TV. I was contemplating doing the whole review of this episode in the Junkion speak that apparently these people are doing.
That's what they are. They're the Junkions from the start of the Transformers movie.
The 80s cartoon.
Right.
They're living amongst the garbage and they're speaking in something I don't understand. I mean, I get what they're saying, but I'm like, did we lose the ability to talk? Like, I'm vaguely remembering it's 3 years into the you know, zombie apocalypse, maybe four. Apparently we've lost the ability to talk, but go ahead.
That was my biggest thing with this. I'm all for weird. I'm all for different. I'm not all for people who live in our United States mm-hmm. and for some reason do not talk normal. Even if they spoke a different language altogether. But if they spoke that language, let's say, with subtitles, as opposed to this weird broken thing that they're doing here.
Right.
It was tough to follow. And I don't want to say that it made things confusing, because I was able to follow along what was going on. It made things more annoying than anything else.
It pretty much did. The only thing that I can hope is because they're all very weird, and apparently, and this is coming from me, they all wear way too much black. I don't know where they're getting all the black in the zombie apocalypse. Everybody's got found black shirts, but that's the group I would be with if I was in the zombie apocalypse. But They're very weird. They come out walking, and they're just like, it looks like they're meandering, but then it turns out that they're going to stand in this weird, like, circle, like they make a symbol or whatever when they all stop walking. I have this weird feeling that that group that we see in that thing are all from, like, a mental institution.
I like that. I like that idea.
Honestly, and they all know each other, and they talk in that weird language because they know each other for years. But they all have, like, and I understand it's the zombie apocalypse, but they have, like, that disheveled, crazy look, if you know what I mean? And I don't know how many people are there, because I'm trying to figure out if they made the rows and piles of garbage, or if that's the way it was when they got there. Do you know what I'm, like, I don't understand a lot of what's happening in that scene.
Well, the last bit I'll say about that whole scene is, so they throw Rick down in, like, a pit.
And then gladiatorial games, yeah.
What was that?
Gladiatorial pit.
Right. And he has to fight a zombie that is, like, just, like, full of spikes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm willing to suspend a little bit of disbelief at this point of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But this might have been pushing tenuously on my grasp of how this thing still exists. How this thing was made. How this thing was made without them killing people.
Well, or maybe it didn't,
we just don't know.
Exactly. Maybe they're in the garbage piles. Maybe those were the bones Rick was standing on.
Right.
But I thought that was funny. The only thing that I am getting tired of is, like, here's another way Rick could lose his hand.
Oh.
Will he or won't he?
Every time he gets a nick, it's like, oh, I've got a hangnail. I'm like, that's how he loses his hand.
Yep. Well, he gets a spike. He gets a zombie spike through it, and then he gets to play in garbage for a while.
Right, and he loses a lot of blood.
That's right. He looks like he's been eating jam without a spoon for a while. He's just, and I will give the crazy lady who talks weird props for not shaking his hand with the bloody hand. I'm like, well, she's not all that deranged.
She and they are crazy people, like from an insane asylum, possibly.
That's my guess.
That's a good theory. I like it better than my theory, which is they're carnies or circus folk.
Oh, that they speak a slang?
Right.
Oh, that's pretty good. I like that too.
Right. Because they were like a freak, like a traveling freak show or something.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Like a wrestling group with talent. I see what you're saying.
Oh, how dare you.
Right. But yeah, I don't know. It could be either one. I like your idea. We'll have to see. Because if they just turn out to be just weird for no, like, rhyme or reason.
Weirdos for the sake of being weirdos.
That's right. They're going to be the Lynch of The Walking Dead, Twin Peaks. That's the Twin Peaks garbage city.
I know how you feel about that.
Well, start me up.
So that's, you know, that's your A story. Your B story, though, I felt more compelling. Best thing on the show. And that was Daryl and Carol reuniting.
Mm-hmm. And it feels so good.
Todd, I wouldn't say it was full dusty onions, but it was getting close a couple times.
For me, it wasn't that much. I mean, more emotional for you. I'll get to that one second. I'm just going to do my little thing, and then we can talk about it. My thing is, I fear for Fat Jerry, Ezekiel's right-hand man.
Oh, because it seems like he's having too much fun?
He's having too much fun. He's handing out cobblers. I'm like, Jerry is not long for this world. And the sad thing is, I always thought I was Eugene. I would be Eugene in the zombie apocalypse.
Right.
But I'm not that, like, stunted of my growth. I found the Todd character in The Walking Dead. And it is Jerry. And if anything happens to Jerry, I riot. That's basically, to heck with Daryl. Jerry's the backbone of The Walking Dead.
I would be spiky pit garbage zombie.
Trust me, you do look like that sometimes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. But anyway, we'll get back to Daryl and Carol.
You bring up a good point about Jerry. Is I fear that if Negan runs into him again, he will try to recruit him by forcible means to replace his previous jolly fat guy character.
Negan needs a. You know what? I'll be Negan's jolly fat guy.
Right.
I have no problem. But yes, we need Jerry to survive to the end. Like he can't die. And I don't think that I don't think all that BMX equipment is going to save him.
No, you mean the costume department from the film Rad isn't going to assist these guys in stopping whatever Negan has up his sleeve?
I don't know. Gleaming the cube, here we come. That's your Slater reference right here.
Hey, it's been a while since we've mentioned Christian Slater on the show.
That's right. I got to bring him back into the fold.
All right. So I really like the Daryl and Carol stuff. I thought it was emotional. The show has kind of missed this sort of emotional beat, and it was good that they kept these characters away for as long as they did, I thought. Mm-hmm. And now the reuniting of them, it was heartbreaking to me that Daryl was lying to her, that everyone was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he was gonna, but it still didn't make it any better when he did.
I agree with you, but you knew that it was coming, that he was going to come around to her, you know, couldn't handle it, or she would be going, but down the road, she didn't want to, and he cares too much about her, but their relationship is doomed. That's all there is to it. I don't like where this is going. I think bad things are going to happen.
Right, and it's doomed in a way that it's going to be Carol who is doomed, because Daryl, on the TV show at the very least, is the only indestructible person.
I have a different opinion on that.
All right.
I think Daryl's going down.
You think so, huh?
Right. I don't know, or he's going away or whatever, but she is, her eventual love is Ezekiel. That's the way it's going. She has a thing for Ezekiel. And if you read the comic, because, you know, in the comic, Michonne ends up liking Ezekiel. Well, Michonne's with Rick. Carol is taking the place. Michonne is taking Andrea's place from the comic, and Carol's taking Michonne's in the love area, if you know what I mean. So it's going to end up, she's going to be falling, and then they can have that storyline that happens with Ezekiel and Michonne in the comic.
Interesting. I don't know if they'll do that, but you make a good point, though.
Mm-hmm. I make great points, actually.
You do. You do make a ton of great points.
Like you as the zombie's pincushion.
Right, in real life.
Yep, you have a lot of great points.
Oh.
See what I did there?
I'm leaving.
I think we're done anyway.
All right. Nothing else I think we have to cover. Next week we'll be back to the full schedule of TV shows with Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Walking Dead, of course. Maybe we'll at some point like binge watch talk or something all of Riverdale. There wasn't a new episode this week, was there?
Yes, there was, because it was Thursday.
Okay.
Like, there was a new episode of Arrow, which I just want to say really quickly, was a gun control episode, and it was amazingly bad.
Oh, I didn't want to cut you off there, because I saw your tweet.
Mm-hmm. It was, oh my God. There's nothing better than I like than two characters while they're doing exposition about, like, you know, who the criminal is, and they're having the gun control debate. While they're doing it, I'm like, oh my God, just go away. Stop it. And it'll win an award. It'll win an award somehow. And they'll have to, the producers will have to buy it.
They might get one, but they'll have to share it amongst several producers.
That's true. But that's it.
All right. So that closes out episode 334 of Long Box Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe. We will see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boo!